From WNYC, New York Public Radio, this is the podcast of The Leonard Lopate Show, and I'm Leonard Lopate. This is just one segment of today's show. The rest of today's show is available for download and on-demand listening at WNYC.org. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners. Please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC podcasts are supported by Holy Name Hospital in Teaneck, New Jersey, providing comprehensive centers in cardiovascular services, interventional radiology, and cancer care. More information at www.holyname.org. You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
You expect to hear talk of alternate universes, parallel dimensions, and warp space on an episode of Star Trek or a trip to a psychic, but Harvard professor Lisa Randall works with these concepts every day. She's at the forefront of a scientific movement that could change our understanding of the universe dramatically in the next few years, including our concept of space and time. Lisa Randall's new book, Warped Passages, Unraveling the Mysteries of the Universe's Hidden Dimensions, is published by HarperCollins, and I'm very pleased it has brought it to my show today. Hello.
Hi there.
So let's get right to it. What is an alternate dimension?
Well, I guess we don't necessarily say alternate dimension. We say extra dimensions, because what we think is that in addition to the three dimensions with which we're familiar, which you might think of as forward, backward, left, right, up, down, there could be other dimensions beyond those that we see, beyond those that we experience, now, other directions in space.
Now, we're used to translating two dimensions, a painting, a photograph, the television screen, into three dimensions conceptually, but it's a lot harder to go past three dimensions.
Right. So a lot of what we have to do is actually through analogy, because we do know how to translate two into three dimensions to some extent. And we can imagine the frustration of beings that really were two-dimensional, that couldn't necessarily experience the three dimensions. What would they think about these projections? Or what would they think about the fact that they were told that they're just slices of higher dimensions? And in the same way, we are not physiologically designed to experience or visualize extra dimensions of space. But that doesn't mean they're not there.
But you said could be. How many dimensions do you believe there are?
I'm going to leave that open. I don't know.
Because we've had physicists here who've said 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. Nobody seems to agree.
Well, that's exactly right. We don't know the answer to that question. So that's the viewpoint that I'm going to take, is that we don't know the answer to that question. We see three, but in the history of physics, there are many times when what we've seen hasn't been all there is. And with dimensions, it's the same way. There could well be more than we see.
We see three, but we're told it's three space and one time.
That's
aren't
true.
We?
That's true. So sometimes we'll talk about space-time. And in fact, it gets confusing when we talk about a fourth dimension. Are we talking about time or space? But time is different. You can think of it as part of what we think of as space-time manifold, space-time geometry. That makes it easier to understand gravity. But I'm really talking about an extra dimension of space. You could consider it a fifth dimension of space-time at the very least.
And when did we start thinking along these lines? When did scientists start to suspect that their understanding of the universe was quite limited?
Well, you know, it's a really interesting story. Mathematicians had thought about extra dimensions for a long time, but very soon after Einstein completed his theory of general relativity, somebody named Theodor Kaluza, realized that actually his theory works for more than three dimensions of space, more than four dimensions of space-time. And he proposed that there was an extra dimension of space. And his purpose was to unify the known forces of the time, electromagnetism and gravity.
So he added one dimension.
So he only added one dimension. Or I guess you can think of it, he didn't actually add it. He hypothesized that out there was an extra dimension. And so the idea of an extra dimension that he proposed has survived till today. His unification theory didn't work. But the idea of an extra dimension, and actually in the next decade, I guess 1926, Felix Klein said why we might not have experienced that extra dimension. And Einstein was actually very intrigued by this idea.
What about the quantum mechanics people? Weren't they looking for missing electrons?
Well, the quantum mechanics people were, first of all, some of the same people were doing gravity and quantum mechanics, Einstein among them. But quantum mechanics was trying to address different sorts of questions. Gravity was talking about big things, big objects in the universe, whether they're planets or solar systems or the whole universe, whereas quantum mechanics was dealing with an atom, dealing with tiny structures. And one of the amazing things about 20th century physics is we understood both a lot better, both the very small and the very big. But they were independent pursuits to some extent.
And we haven't been able to reconcile them to this day.
In the 1980s, physicists started to take more seriously the idea of reconciling the two. And we should be careful when we say they can't be reconciled, because actually, they both work fine in their established domains. It's really these extraordinarily small distances or extraordinarily high energies where there are conflicts. And that's what just tells us, theoretically, we need to go beyond and really have a theory of quantum gravity. But our physics works just fine over most domains.
My guest is Lisa Randall, who is a leading theoretical physicist and expert on particle physics, on string theory and cosmology. She is at Harvard these days, and she's written a book called Warped Passages, Unraveling the Mysteries of the Universe's Hidden Dimensions. It's published by Echo, which is a division of HarperCollins. You've mentioned gravity a few times. You've spent much of your time thinking about gravity, the dominant force on Earth. So why is gravity often described as a weak force?
I know, it doesn't seem so weak in our daily lives, but actually, fundamentally, gravity is very weak. Gravity only seems a strong force because massive, really big objects act on us. If you think about it, a tiny magnet can pick up a paperclip competing against the entire Earth. I can jump off the ground. The entire Earth is trying to pull me back. So gravity is fundamentally weak. In fact, if you had two elementary particles and compared their electromagnetic force to their gravitational force, one is just many, many orders of magnitude smaller than the other. Gravity is so weak that we don't even bother to think about it when we talk about particle physics usually.
Is gravity by its nature weak, or could gravity be a greater force in another dimension?
Very nice lead-in. In fact, that's what we realized. So this has been a major puzzle for particle physicists. Since the 1970s, people have been trying to understand why gravity is so much weaker than the other forces. And it's a really serious problem because our theory almost seems to say they want to be the same size. So how could this be? And what we hypothesize, and might actually be true, is that gravity is in fact a strong force, but we're only seeing the tail end of it. Gravity is concentrated within an extra dimension, but somewhere else, not where we are. So if we're anywhere except where gravity is concentrated, we would see gravity as very weak.
So it's leaking into other dimensions?
You can think of it as leaking, or you can just think of it as disproportionately spread out. It's just not a democracy. It's just there's a lot more gravity somewhere else in some sense.
Let's get back to these other dimensions. Are you saying that there could be another dimension millimeters from us, or are we living in all of the dimensions and just unaware of most of them? And which dimension are we living in, if there are 10 or 12 or 13?
So we see three large extended dimensions. The other dimensions are abutting us. They're right here. But we don't necessarily travel through them, and they may or may not be big. So those other dimensions we're not experiencing the same way we're experiencing the three dimensions that we know about.
But in an odd way, this almost sounds like the sort of thing that mystics talk about when people tell you that they have jinn sitting on their shoulders.
Yeah, and a lot of them get in touch with me and send me emails and actually think we're working on the same thing. And in fact, if someone had told me I'd be doing this stuff 10 years ago, I would have laughed at them. But what's so interesting is that there really are physics reasons to think about it. For example, this theory that explains the weakness of gravity, it's not just something I'm hypothesizing. It's something that gives experimental predictions. And within the next few years, experimenters will go out and test whether this idea is right.
They're going to test it through colliders.
That's right. There's going to be a machine called the Large Hadron Collider, the LHC. It's going to operate near Geneva, Switzerland. And what it will do is bang together protons at enormously high energies, so high that they can make heavy particles via E equals MC squared. If you have a lot of energy, you can make particles with big mass M. And those particles might actually be particles that travel in an extra dimension.
So all of these theories that people have been coming up with over the last 20 years or so that seem to be unprovable, now they might be proved right or wrong as a result of the Large Hadron Collider?
Well, that's a bit of a stretch. In fact, the kind of work I do is a little distinct from the kind of work that pure string theorists do, because we try to tie in ideas from string theory to things that can be tested. Some of the elements of string theory and some of the elements of some of my theories are actually beyond what we can test. Some theories of extra dimensions we don't know how to test just yet, but we are thinking about other ideas that actually could have implications for our world, could actually explain properties of particles and masses, and those could have testable consequences, not just in particle accelerators, but maybe even out there in the cosmos in gravity.
Could the collider find new particles or forms of matter that can exist in a number of dimensions?
In principle, it could find extra. It could find particles that go through extra dimensions.
So then, what happens to the laws of physics when we come up with these ideas? Will they still work in these other dimensions?
Right. So that's a great question. And in fact, one of the things I like about working on these extra dimensional theories is that we're not in the quantum gravity regime. We really are in a regime where Einstein's theory does tell us the predictions. The predictions are different if there are a different number of dimensions, but we do know the predictions. And furthermore, we know how to match the theories on. It's not like suddenly all our laws of physics fail and then something else takes over. What we see gradually works into the consequences of extra dimensions.
Are the formulas for electromagnetivity and gravity on a planetary scale the same?
Not quite sure what that question means, but we know the laws of electromagnetism and we know the laws of gravity. Electromagnetism, we understand quantum mechanically and classically. Gravity, we really understand classically, so we understand it on large scales. We don't really understand it on very tiny scales yet. Extremely tiny. Like
what I was saying, they change on different scales, I guess, was what I was trying to say.
Well, it could be, for example, that electromagnetism only spreads out in three dimensions of space, whereas gravity could spread out in more dimensions of space. So there could be really fundamental differences in the way gravity and electromagnetism operate.
Do you assume that all of these dimensions, have to be connected? So am I living perhaps in, let's say we decide on 11 dimensions. Am I living in 11 dimensions, just not aware of it?
It could well be that you were living in 11 dimensions and you just became aware of it. But basically, dimensions are, they're places in some sense. It's telling us how big space is. How many dimensions does space extend through? How many points would you need to really locate something? And it could be those extra dimensions are there and we're just not experiencing them. But they could have consequences.
All of these calculations and mathematical models are connected to string theory, aren't they?
Well, they are and they aren't. That's what's kind of fun about it. We use ideas from string theory, such as extra dimensions and these mechanisms that can locate things in extra dimensions. But we're not necessarily constraining it to be derivable from string theory right away. For example, one of the things we did, right after we did it, we were told, oh, well, that's very interesting, but it doesn't happen in string theory. But within a year, people found out how to have it happen in string theory. I mean, what I think of as mechanisms, things that string theorists might want to find in their theories, and instead of just being restricted to the ideas we know about, are there really fundamentally new concepts that might emerge?
We're now talking about things like membranes or brains, B-R-A-N-E-S.
Well, we're talking about what happens with brains. So brains do emerge from string theory. So in the 1990s, string theorists realized that string theory is actually a misnomer. It's not just a theory of strings, which are one-dimensional extended objects. It actually has these other objects called brains, which are membrane-like objects in higher-dimensional space, objects that extend through more than one dimension, kind of like a shower curtain is a two-dimensional object in a three-dimensional room. We might have brains in higher-dimensional space, and it could be we live on the surface of a brain. The new ideas that we find are things that can happen if those brains exist. We find that gravity can be dramatically warped. It can be warped in such a way that gravity gets concentrated, and we see this weak gravity that I described. We even found that you could have infinite extra dimensions that we don't experience because gravity is so concentrated.
What would Einstein have said about all of this?
I think Einstein would have liked it. Einstein was actually excited about the idea of extra dimensions. He wanted to have a real unified theory, and I think these ideas are consistent with the idea of a unified theory. So my guess is he would have liked it.
And actually one of the theories he came up with and then rejected turns out to be key to the development of string theory, doesn't it?
Well, it has to do with this idea of how gravity and electromagnetism might have been unified, this idea of Kluze's, and that does factor in perhaps in string theory.
Although there are still some leading physicists who reject the whole concept of string theory, and one said that never had so many brilliant minds worked so hard on something that may not be true.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not doing strictly string theory. We're trying to see what connects the world. I mean, how do we make advances beyond what we know? We can do theory and we can do experiment. Those are the tools at our disposal. So people have reasons to think we need a theory of quantum gravity, a theory that combines together quantum mechanics and gravity. That might be string theory. But we also know there are things we'd like to understand about our world. Where do masses and forces come from? And we're trying to combine them together.
My guest is Lisa Randall. Her book, Warped Passages, Unraveling the Mysteries of the Universe's Hidden Dimensions, is published by Echo. We will continue our conversation after this. We're back with Lisa Randall, who is the first tenured woman in the Princeton Physics Department, or was the first tenured woman theoretical physicist at MIT and Harvard. And she has written a book called Warp Passages, Unraveling the Mysteries of the Universe's Hidden Dimensions. It's published by ECHO, which is a division of HarperCollins. You collaborated with another leading scientist, Raman Sundaram, of Johns Hopkins University, on two of the most highly cited papers of the last 5 years. What were those papers about?
Well, those papers were about warped geometry. That's where the title of my book comes from. They were about the fact that when you have extra-dimensional space and you have this object now called a brain, you can actually have gravity dramatically distorted. You can have it exponentially weaken as it goes out into an extra dimension. And the consequences of that are really remarkable. It could explain the weakness of gravity. It also allows an infinite extra dimension. And I should mention that since the 1920s, people thought the only way that extra dimensions could be hidden is that they're so tiny we don't see them. And we found a completely different mechanism. It might apply in the world. It might really be true that there are higher dimensions that are just so warped that we perceive three dimensions of space, even though there are more.
Was gravity what got you into all of this, thinking about gravity and the nature of it and why it is weak?
No, you know, it's funny because I think part of the reason I found such different results was I was coming at it from a very different direction. I was really coming at it as a particle physicist. I was trying to understand questions. We actually started off thinking not even about this question of weakness of gravity directly. We were thinking about an exotic theory called supersymmetry. And I had this idea that we can get rid of undesirable interactions, interactions that aren't seen in nature, by separating out particles in an extra dimension. But then we started studying that in detail. We started studying what the gravity would look like, and we realized that it has other dramatic consequences. So we were aware. We had these questions in the back of our mind, but we didn't actually set out to solve those problems.
A caller wants you to give an example of how regular math can help us conceptualize hidden dimensions.
Well, I don't know what you mean by regular math.
Well, that's what I've been told. The caller said regular math. I guess it is a math of the sort that most people can do, not the sort of thing that we see on those blackboards that look totally mystifying.
So there are some things we can understand with what I think of as regular math. I hope you do, too. So, for example, if we were trying to understand what a Flatlander would see when a sphere passed through. So a Flatlander would be someone living in a two-dimensional space. Suppose someone lived on a two-dimensional tabletop and saw a sphere pass through. Well, the equation of a sphere is x squared plus y squared plus z squared equals r squared, where x, y, and z are the three-dimensional coordinates and r is the radius. But every time that sphere passes through, you're at a fixed coordinate. Say one of the coordinates, z, is fixed. You are at a fixed location. So then you can see that what you're left with, if you've set z to a constant, is you get a circle or a disk, you get a circle, x squared plus y squared equals r squared minus z squared. But now z is constant, so you have a different radius. And you can see that that radius increases in size and decreases in size. And so you could do the same thing with hyperspheres and spheres. So there's little math tricks like that that you can use to understand how you're going from one dimension to another.
In doing this kind of work, is there an Apple, Eureka, Newtonian gravity moment sometimes, or is this something that happens in little incremental steps?
Well, I think for us, the apple was really this geometry. Really, we wrote down the equations. We didn't know this amazing warp geometry would come out of it. Once we had the warp geometry, then it was a question of understanding the consequences. And we didn't know that you could have an infinite extra dimension. We started off with finite-sized extra dimensions. We had dimensions bounded between these brains, these membrane-like objects. But I realized by staring at the equations that you actually didn't need the second brain. If you got rid of the second brain, you're left with an infinite dimension. And the theory still made sense. So there was that eureka moment, but then there's the hard work of going back and making sure that it all makes sense.
What kinds of problems could be solved if we prove there are extra dimensions?
Well, that's a great question, and we don't know the answer to that fully. I suspect if there are extra dimensions, they will play a big role in understanding cosmology, how the universe evolved. We might ultimately
finally understand what the Big Bang was all about. I keep on hearing that we've gone back to a fraction of a second right after the Big Bang, but we've never gotten back to the Big Bang
itself.
That's
right, and there might be two reasons we haven't done that. One is that we don't understand quantum gravity, how to combine together quantum mechanics and gravity. But the other is that maybe the starting point was extra dimensions. I mean, recently I've been studying cosmology, how the universe would evolve if there are more dimensions of space. And it would be quite different, at least in the early stages. So there could be all these possibilities that we would be obligated to look into if we know there are extra dimensions.
Could collisions between brains in the 10th or 11th dimension explain the Big Bang?
It could. We don't have any reason to think it does yet, but it could be that there are collisions. It could be that we start off with an expanding universe of many dimensions and we end up stuck on a brain somewhere and it localizes gravity. There really are many different possibilities.
But right now, this is the sort of thing that is totally theoretical with nobody thinking, oh, well, somewhere along the line, this might help us find new applications for nuclear energy or finding new sources of power.
We're not actually looking for new sources of energy just yet, but you have to give us a little bit of leeway, because if you asked Einstein, would general relativity ever have any applications, he wouldn't have foreseen GPS systems either. I mean, usually when we do this work, we're at the edge of what we can even hope to perceive, hope to test. It's many years down the road when things will, or sometimes not so many, but we can't really foresee applications. It's really a question of understanding our universe better.
How long after Einstein published his theories did they... I'm not asking for exact dates. I saw your eyebrows go up. But it took a little while before people... First, they had to prove that it was true. Some tests were done, and they found that light did bend in space. But then when did people start realizing, hey, this can actually have practical applications?
Well, I think it was a little bit the other way. They sort of developed these GPS systems and realized if they didn't put in general relativity, they were going to get the wrong answer. So it wasn't just general relativity that needed to be developed. You needed systems of satellites that were put up in the air. There were a lot of things that happened that made it and that made people want to do these sorts of things.
But although I understand that at Einstein's time, there was a lot less communication between scientists and physicists. I read somewhere, I think, that Rutherford proved one of the theories, and Einstein didn't even know that he'd proved it. For a couple of years or something like that. But nowadays, everybody knows everything within 10 seconds, don't they?
Well, you know, it's funny. This is a bigger question than just for physicists. I mean, communication is very different today. I mean, then there was less, it took longer for things to be communicated. But when they were, people paid attention. I mean, now we have so much information. Sometimes it could be a good idea, passes across your desk, and you don't even notice it for a while.
A caller wants to know your thoughts on what happened before the Big Bang. Have you thought about it?
That's really the regime beyond which physicists can think about. I've thought about it in the sense of if you think of the Big Bang as inflation, when the universe started exponentially expanding, what happened before then? But it's really a question of what you mean by before the Big Bang. If you really mean by before time started, well, I don't know how to think about that.
Lisa Randall's book, Warped Passages, Unraveling the Mysteries of the Universe's Hidden Dimensions, is published by ECHO, ECCO. This is WNYC 93.9 AM 820. We're online at WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. We've been talking about universes, which means one, right? The universe. What are multiverses?
Well, multiverse is kind of a bad name, as you kind of point out, since universe should be everything. But there's an idea that there could be other regions of space that don't interact with us or interact so weakly that we might as well think of them as independent universes. And multiverse is the name used to describe this sort of scenario. And it could arise for different reasons. It could be that the universe is inflating and different pieces bubble off. It could be that in this brain scenario that we've been talking about, where there are membrane-like objects in higher dimensional space, there could be different brains with really independent different universes on them, fundamentally different chemistry, fundamentally different matter and forces. They really would be, in some sense, different universes.
So this is another case where we have to conceptualize, because what we do know about the universe is stars and planets and galaxies.
And
those are the things we can see.
That's right. And it's even worse than that. We know that there's something called the horizon, which is beyond which we can't see, because we know the speed of light is finite. Our universe has been around for a finite amount of time. We can only even hope to get signals from a finite distance away. Beyond that, all bets are off. We don't know what's going on.
Well, there's the problem for people who are not in science, that they can't conceptualize it. I know I've seen that the universe is not a vast, never-ending thing, but it's kind of... What is the theory? That it's kind of a twisted...
Well, you know, everybody has different
ideas.
Oh,
there are still different ideas. Well, it doesn't matter. No, but still, I can't imagine any of those things. I can see the pictures, the drawings in the New York Times on Tuesday and say, uh-huh,
well,
and then I move on.
And to some extent, that's what we think when we see those pictures, because they're not telling us a whole lot. What we're really thinking about are the equations and the physical consequences, what is really there.
So when you're looking at the math, you can visualize?
We conceptualize. You know, people ask me about this a lot. It's not clear that I'm always literally visualizing, but I'm conceptualizing. It's a little bit like if someone asked you, when you're thinking, are you thinking in English? You know, how are you thinking? You're thinking conceptually, sometimes in words, sometimes we're thinking in math, sometimes in pictures, and somehow the ideas are just what's sitting there. It's hard to say exactly what it is.
But it must amuse you at times to think about how you're going to territory that was the domain of mystics and science fiction writers just a few years ago.
You know, it's funny because you just start, when you're doing something, you're just doing it. And then when I start talking about it to other people, then I realize, oh, yeah, I guess this is pretty exotic stuff. And, you know, it's going to expand people's minds. But really, for us, we were thinking so hard about these problems, it just seemed to really have the air of truth, which is why we started thinking about it.
It's led people to call in to ask about links to astrology and other things. And I guess that's because they're trying to find some kind of connection to things they think they understand.
Well, everyone, I think, wants to understand beyond the universe, beyond what are the things that are immediately obvious to us. And some people will try to do it different people will try to do it in very different ways. I prefer to do it in ways that I really think are tied to science, that I can really go out and test, that I can extrapolate from what we know. Otherwise, it really is pure theorizing, and I just don't know what to do with it.
I mentioned earlier that you're the first tenured woman, or were the first tenured woman in the Princeton Physics Department, and then the first tenured woman theoretical physicist at MIT and Harvard, which suggests that there aren't a heck of a lot of other women working in the field. Is that changing?
I'd like to think it's changing. I'd like to think that having a book out written by me will help change it. But
you're at Harvard. Lawrence Summers got into a lot of trouble for suggesting that you're an anomaly.
And that's the way it is. Some people will think that until it changes. But I'd like to see a change, and I think people are becoming aware that there are these other possibilities.
You find it's easier to not have to fight the perceptions of male peers?
Not quite sure what that means, but basically, you know, we do what we do.
And I mean, you proving yourself. Hey, I can do all of this stuff.
You know, with some people, you'll always have a little bit of an extra barrier to overcome. With some people, once you start talking about the science, that's just about the science. And you just have to really believe that you're just about the science and not worry about it too much.
Let's get back to that Large Hadron Collider. So tests will be done. What will they actually involve?
So these are really beautiful experiments. They're really enormous. And what's incredible is they're so enormous, but they're so precise. And what happens is particles collide. You make other particles, and then they decay.
Well, how do you get particles to collide? You have to break up an atom, don't you?
Right. So what they have are these 27-kilometer in circumference tunnel where these protons get accelerated. So they get accelerated to enormously high energy. Then there are magnets. There are magnets that make them go around the circle, and there are quadrupole magnets that focus them. So these proton beams collide into each other. And when they do, stuff inside will annihilate and turn into energy. When that happens, then it will create stuff, and then you need detectors to actually record the properties, where properties will include energy and charges, all the kind of stuff that tells us what it was that got created.
Well, we've had colliders in the past. Mm-hmm. They weren't big enough?
They weren't high enough in energy. So right now, the highest energy collider, it doesn't matter what these units mean, but it's 2 TeV. It's at Batavia, Illinois. The one that's going to exist at CERN is going to be 14 TeV, 7 times higher in energy. And the physicists have good reasons to think this is precisely the sort of energy you want to probe if you want to answer questions like about particle masses and the weakness of gravity.
And there was an opportunity for this collider to be built in the United States. We turned it down.
Well, we took a while to turn it down. We first said yes, and then we said no. And it's even worse than that because it would have been 40 TeV. So it would have been even a better machine. So it is really sad that we don't have that machine in operation now.
Do you think that says something about what's going on in this country? Because I think it was yesterday or the day before, the Times had a piece about how science teaching is actually being put aside because of the No Child Left Behind rules, which are emphasizing language skills and math.
I think we definitely are in a problematic time today. I think science education is really important. I think we have to have good science teachers. I think it's not respected enough, science teaching. And so it's just education in general is really important and should be paid attention to, and also science in this country.
Well, what does this mean for you as a teacher at Harvard? Are you seeing students who are smart as they ever were?
At Harvard, we still get fantastic students, so I can't complain.
Well, you've been
at
the best schools, Princeton, MIT,
and
Harvard.
And it is one of the advantages of being in a good school is you get good students, and it's really rewarding to train good students and have see them go on and do well.
So what's next? Are you waiting for the results of the LHC?
Yeah, I'm just going to go to the beach and wait for a few years. No, we're thinking about other consequences. We're thinking about cosmology, how the universe evolved. We're thinking about, are there experimental consequences that people have missed? I'm actually very excited these days about something called gravity wave detectors. So when you have cataclysmic events in the universe, they create ripples in space-time that will be detected. And I think that might be one way to actually find out about these extra dimensions. So there's a lot of interesting things that haven't been explored yet, and I'm trying to work on those.
And then when does the LHC start working?
It turns on in 2007, but it will really start really doing science in 2008.
I want to thank you so much for being with us. Lisa Randall, Warped Passages, Unraveling the Mysteries of the Universe's Hidden Dimensions. It's published by Echo, and it was a notable book, New York Times Book Review, notable book of the year, and deservedly so. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast of the Leonard Lopate Show from WNYC New York Public Radio. This was just one of the show's segments. You can hear everything we do on demand at WNYC.org. Check out our other podcasts at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners. Please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.